Anybody? Anybody?
Okay. Oh, okay, you can do the introductions if you.
Russ Stewart.
I just know E. That's all.
Greetings.
Hey. Brian Scuttle here.
Ronnie Haynes.
Hey, Ma.
Yahoo's the microphone. Here to Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. Round 2 of our
yes.
Knockdown, drag out.
Yes. Well, you know.
Over this. Although probably less so this time.
Yeah. It'll be hopefully less bashing of the toes with this one because I really did like this one. Mm-hmm. I really, really like this one. This is up there as far as comic book movies are, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that.
The Amazing, Spider-Man 2. Sorry.
Ron, of course, is referring to the fact that for a while this was going to be called The Amazing Spider-Man after the comic book line, but they were...
Yeah, what
happened?
I believe
happened? They were not allowed to use it for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, I can imagine that being tied up. It's a red tape.
Well, considering how long the first movie took to get made, because of red tape and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
so. But considerably better title sequence, I think.
Yeah.
A definite improvement upon the first one. I mean, the first one was very interesting, but this one just has comic book movie written all over it. I really do prefer this title sequence to the first one.
No, I would have to agree. It's great because of the fact that it's like, for people who hadn't seen the original in a while, this is a really good sort of, you know, summing up of what happened in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of, you know, here's what happened, you know, here's what you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get the credits, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
you get these really great paintings as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think just all around, this movie improves on the first one.
Yeah. I believe Alan Ross did the paintings for this credit sequence.
Mm-hmm.
The famous comic book artist. That would be my dog, Buffy, if you can hear her.
She really wants to be a part of this.
Well, she's more just freaked out about the storm.
Yeah.
That it's over our head.
I mean, I'll probably say this more than once here. I mean, but this movie really does stand alone as far as I'm concerned. And this movie could stand alone on its own without. I really do feel to a certain degree you almost don't have to see the first one, and I wouldn't recommend it just because of my feelings on the first film. You know, just
wow.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Seriously, I didn't like the first one, but.
Dang.
Stands alone. Wouldn't recommend.
I couldn't. I just.
I know you didn't like it.
Listen,
but
you know,
geez,
listen to our commentary
I mean,
for the first one because you know. I'm gonna try not to dwell on my feelings on the first one just
mm-hmm.
because of how much I like this one. But Tobey Maguire.
Yep. Tobey Maguire from, obviously the first Spider-Man, but also
Pleasantville,
Cider House Rules, Wonder Boys, Seabiscuit, a bunch of other stuff that I'm sure I'm forgetting.
Yeah, I mean, when Tobey Maguire was first picked, I was like, oh, wow, Tobey Maguire's Peter Parker, this isn't going to work. But, I mean, it worked pretty well in the first one. I kind of got
uh-huh.
used to it. And in the second one,
that was one of the few things
really
that
work well.
Yeah, that was
yeah.
one of the few things I did agree with on the first film. Is that, you know, again, I mean, we ran this into the ground of the first one, but, like, you know, Sam Raimi was all about casting Peter Parker and not Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And this heroic music, I just think it's hysterical. Like,
yeah.
it's all about him delivering pizzas on time and just,
mm-hmm.
not about anything else but that.
Yeah. I like how you, in just a scan, don't know, 4 minutes 50 seconds into this movie, or actually more like 2 minutes or so, you sort of, you get what Peter Parker's plight is going to be throughout the entire movie. You really get it, the fact that trying to juggle the being the superhero, the responsibility that brings, as well as the having a normal life.
Right. Dave, any comments on these spectacular visual effects thus far? These Academy Award winning.
Deservingly so.
Yes.
Yeah, obviously the effects are better in this one than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have yet to see some of the better effects.
Oh yeah, yeah, obviously, but like, you know, this is just.
Well, when they have what will probably be like $300 million to make Spider-Man 3,
mm-hmm.
I think we'll probably see even better special effects.
Mm. Well, good stuff.
Best to go ahead and just leave her in here. I don't think she'll be too big of a hassle. Just
she's under my chair now.
Yeah, I like this scene. This scene was hilarious for me because it just how long it took for me to put those mops in the closet.
It's like just leave them, deliver the pizza, and just and her look just
right.
What is this guy doing?
You would think the pizza would be messed up by then.
Yeah, really. Okay. Yeah. Well, it looks like a couple of them are, actually.
Yeah.
That fourth one down, especially.
Yeah, I remember them talking about on the technical commentary, just making sure that the number of boxes were correct and that the boxes were animated correctly.
Yeah.
And some of that attention to detail.
I told you. I told you would enjoy that.
Mm-hmm.
The technical commentary.
Yeah.
I recommended that to you, and I told you knew you'd enjoy that. I find this particularly funny. It's just kind of like a soldier being stripped of his rank.
A lot of people did. I mean, I did hear laughs during that.
I did.
Like,
it was like.
Fired again. This is J.K. Simmons. Right?
Yeah. J.K. Freeman.
Freeman?
Yeah.
No, Simmons.
Simmons.
No, wait a minute. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of somebody else.
Yeah.
You call Dave?
Who in one of the documentaries, Stan Lee said played the part.
Stanley wanted to play.
Yeah, said that he wanted to play Jameson, but he said that J.K. Simmons played the part even better than he would, and played the part just perfectly. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, some people, I mean, I think in the first one, maybe he was slightly over the top
sometimes. Oh, don't get me started on
that. I know. I know you have a problem with that. But for me, he was never really too over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I mean, I'm kind of more used to him, and he's a little bit better. And so I think
the character's much better realized.
Right.
I mean, the character's just much better realized in this particular.
But you know, I mean, you know, he was kind of going for the 40s, 50s news post thing, and I mean, you know, that's definitely constant between the two. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, he just played the part a lot better in this one.
Well, it's just the balance,
right.
is there.
Wasn't he supposed to hook up with her at some point?
She's a love interest in the comic books.
Okay.
I mean, this particular
mm-hmm.
character, whose name I can't remember, but she's a love interest to Peter Parker's in the comic book. I know that much.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. The actress who plays her is Elizabeth Banks, who was also in Seabiscuit,
gotcha.
As well as the original Spider-Man.
Well, we're already speaking of you know, people we've seen in, you know, familiar territory before.
Yeah.
And J.K. Simmons is he was in The Gift, another Sam Raimi movie.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Man, it's been a while since I've seen The Gift.
But yeah, you showed that to me not too long ago, and I ended up really enjoying that.
Well, I let you borrow it.
Yeah.
Not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen it in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Baker.
In the comic books, isn't this character supposed to turn into somebody?
What's this? Yeah, he is supposed.
Doesn't he eventually
become
a villain? Yeah,
but I can't remember
in
what
the comic
the name.
Books anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
who knows?
Who knows if that's ever going to be realized
yeah.
in the movies? But
I can't remember the name of the villain though.
The lizard guy or something like that. Oh, like, what's that guy?
I think you're right. Yeah.
Maybe that. Yeah, I forget too. It's just yeah. I used to watch cartoon all the time.
Dylan Baker, who's been character actor for a long time, and a lot of really good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was watching the blooper reel, and during the second book bag that hits him in the head is Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
And it like catches on his face, and he like yanks him over. And you know, I was just going through the documentaries. You know, I saw that when Bruce Campbell mentioned that you know, Sam Raimi likes to give verbal and physical abuse. You know, not too much, but you know, enough such that you notice. And so I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, ask Bruce Campbell. He's like an expert at Raimi physical violence on set. especially if you hear the Evil Dead 2 commentary, which, you know, by the way, we just
legendary
saw.
Legendary in my.
We just saw the Oldsmobile that's in every Sam Raimi
movie.
Oh, yeah,
the classic.
The yes. classic.
Yes.
And James Franco as, what's his name, Harry Osborn.
Rosemary Harris
as
Aunt May.
Who's fantastic.
Yeah, she's
great.
Yeah. And,
I mean, everyone's just pitch perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the casting really is pretty, pretty brilliant.
And just, they just know these characters by now.
And, of course, we would be remiss without mentioning also Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane.
Right.
Who you believe was robbed of an Oscar nomination for the first film. Or, like, you know, where
overlooked.
Well,
I mean,
not robbed, but overlooked.
I thought she was overlooked, though, probably. Although I think more it was for her performance that year in The Cat's Meow.
Mm-hmm.
And this year I felt like she was overlooked again, but this time I felt it was more for Eternal Sunshine of the
Spotless
Mind.
Right.
She's never been my
favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
Me, actress. I mean, she's nice to look at, you know, she's not the worst. It's really hard to verbalize how I feel about Kirsten Dunst as an overall act. That's the thing. I really fell in love with her after Eternal Sunshine. That was that's without question my favorite performance of hers ever. And you know, it's never been like I haven't enjoyed watching her, but she's never been my, you know, she's never truly blown me away until maybe, you know, Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah.
That was like everyone was great in that movie. But we're not talking about that movie now.
No, we aren't.
What movie are we talking about?
That would be the one on screen now, Spider-Man.
Okay,
2.
All right. Back to...
Yeah, what I like about the beginning of the movie is we get the introduction to a lot of the conflict between, you know, just a lot of conflicts that's going on between in the characters' lives, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Parker trying to balance, you know, work and Spider-Man, you know, the sort of conflict between, you know, Tobey Maguire's character and Harry Osborn, and then Aunt May and her problem with money, you know, and so we're just kind of getting introduced to all these conflicts that need to be resolved.
Yeah.
Hopefully by the end of the movie.
Well, again, I mean, for me, one of the things I mentioned in my review of the film was I felt it did something that, for me, no other superhero movie at this time had up until this time it done, which is really deal with the personal responsibility, the conflicts between the personal responsibility to your friends, your family, your job,
your life in general,
your life, and being a superhero. It's something that I saw for 7 seasons of Buffy, which is clearly inspired by comic book movies, or comic books in general, not necessarily the movies. But, I mean, it's a show that's clearly inspired by that comic book aesthetic. But it also dealt with stuff for me that hadn't really been dealt with in comic book movies until now.
Right. And, you know, so, I mean, I think some of that is just the character, you know, I mean, because you have, you know, Superman, Batman, they out, you know, Batman's kind of, you know, always aloof, rich guy, you know, I mean, how much can you really tell about his life, but now we got to kind of have know, kind of a nerdy
working
guy,
class
guy, yeah, who's broke a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know? And so we have a lot more material to work with when you start talking about
why that. Why is the scene that mirrors the scene in the first movie so much better?
You think there's one of the first movies better?
No, I'm saying this scene that mirrors the scene in the first movie in the backyard. And why is this scene just...
Because of the fact that I think it's probably because of the fact that you know the characters at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that they're... You feel... For me, you feel that there's a connection now between those. Whereas in the first movie, it was still growing. It was still...
The first movie,
relationship was still just...
Not to mention the first movie, I felt absolutely zero chemistry between these two.
Yeah, I feel a lot more chemistry now. And all the scenes that they have together, I feel a lot more chemistry. I mean, I think they may have actually worked on it, you know, just a little bit, you know, just playing off each other, getting used to each other, you know, hanging out with each other, whatever it took, you know, to actually make that chemistry work better. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's better writing, better directing.
Between the two. Plus, there's no speech about. I want to act. I'm sorry. I couldn't get past some of that crap. I'm sorry.
not nearly as bad as Star Wars, though.
Oh, oh yeah.
So, I mean,
which we walked out on.
Yeah,
while recording the commentary.
Yeah, you know.
I want to act. I'm sorry. That was just so lame. Okay.
But I mean,
I'm back.
It's a good question to ask. You know, what's the difference between? Because you know, I mean the script, I mean, the words right here are not super brilliant.
No, they're not. No, no, no.
They're not in the first one, and, you know, they're not in the Star Wars movie. So you know, I mean, you know, that's like three levels, you know, bad, kind of okay. This is actually pretty darn good for, you know, action flick, you know.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, you know, what's the difference between, you know, how do you make that all work? You know, I mean, why is one so bad, you know?
Or why is one lacking so much?
Why is one lacking? I mean, because, you know, I mean, Star Wars has, you know, Natalie Portman. I mean, wow.
Okay.
You know,
well,
I mean, she's phenomenal.
Well, you know? I mean, I think we are talking about writing. I mean, I think we are talking about, and
Alvin
exclusively
Sargent.
About writing. I mean, you know, Star Wars, you have George Lucas, who never really that great of a writer, especially when it comes to dialogue. You have David Koepp on the original Spider-Man, which is... I mean, he's okay at best. I'm still, I'm a little shaky about him doing the adaptation of War of the Worlds for Spielberg, but, you know, it's like, whatever. And then you have Alvin Sargent, who actually won an Oscar for his script for Ordinary People back in 1980, and recently co-wrote the script for the movie Unfaithful. So, I mean, there's, like, a quantum leap in, like, prestige when it comes to writing.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it does, because, like you said, Star Wars has Natalie Portman.
Right.
You know, who just got nominated for an Oscar.
Right.
For Closer.
Right.
And, you know.
And who's never given a bad performance that I see, really.
Seriously.
You know?
And so it's like, so what's the difference when it comes down to writing?
Yes. Right.
You know, admittedly watching, you know, the first movie, even doing the commentary, when we were doing the commentary, it's like, you know, the flaws do really reveal themselves in those type of movies.
Right.
If they are there to begin with, and, you know, in that case, there are.
You know, it goes back to what I was talking to you about at one point, Brian. That's all right. It's just because it is pretty hilarious. Rent? Just the sheer fact that I didn't fully realize this, Alfred Molina, I didn't fully realize this until, like, long after we'd done the commentary for the first one, that I just did not believe a single minute of the first movie. I just did not believe it at all. And I believe every frame of this.
Yeah.
I mean, this, it just goes back to just being able to suspend your disbelief, and, you know, I believe every minute of this movie. I believe, you know, that's what it boiled down for me. And it's unfortunate that I wasn't able to get into the first commentary because, again, I didn't realize this until long after we'd done it. But that was my main problem, I think, is that I just didn't believe it. I didn't believe a frame of it. And this one, and here's a big reason why, you know, just like Alfred Molina. What did he bring to the table here? But, you know, just I really did think he would, as far as like performances being overlooked, I really did. I mean, I know it's silly because I know like I can't see a comic book movie ever being nominated for anything other than technical awards, but
yeah.
Alfred Molina he really did blow me away in this. I mean, yeah, I really genuinely enjoyed his performance. Mm-hmm. I mean, not since Jim Carrey and, you know, as the Riddler, you know, had we seen a performance in a comic book movie like this. I really do believe that, you know. And
yeah.
I really do.
Although, I mean, I would probably disagree with you simply because of the fact that I'm more of an X-Men fan than you are.
Yeah,
because
I mean, some of the
performances in those movies are pretty damn good.
Pretty darn good.
I mean, you know. But Alfred Molina and Jim Carrey are pretty much at, like, and Jack Nicholson as the Joker,
and
Michelle Pfeiffer as
Danny DeVito to a certain degree as well.
Yeah. I don't think she's coming out.
I think she's better off in here.
Yeah.
But,
never mind.
Danny DeVito as the Penguin. I was a fan of that performance.
And I watched that movie again. I'll admit his performance is good, but yeah, go ahead and let the dog out, since evidently she does want out. But, I mean, I saw that movie again recently, and it's like, I don't know. It's like
something
about that character.
I just revel in just how dark that entire movie is. I just revel in that. I really do like Batman Returns. It is one of my personal favorites. It's obviously not one of the best comic book movies out there, but it's a personal favorite of mine. You know, just for how dark it is. I mean, and I'm a fan of Tim Burton, so.
But anyway,
let's talk about this movie.
Alfred Molina, of course, in that great opening sequence of Raiders of the Lost Ark, in Boogie Nights, he had an absolutely great scene with Steve Coogan and Jim Jarmusch's Coffee and Cigarettes last year as well,
which was
quite hilarious.
Let's not forget Chocolat. Brian?
Oh,
one of Brian's personal favorites. Chuckle.
One of the worst movies ever nominated for Best Picture. But anyway.
I like this gag right here.
Yeah, I do too. The man should know. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work.
It worked, but you know what, though?
I mean, it's a funny gag.
But that's the thing, though.
I'm just saying Peter Parker should know better. I mean, I think it's a hilarious gag, but
that's the thing though. Like, I believed it.
Oh yeah,
you know, like going back to the whole thing. Like, you know, like in the first movie, if I'd seen something like that in the first, I would have. It would just been something else. It'd been another thing that would have thrown me out of the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, but yeah, I mean, it's like even like little throwaway gags like that, I find absolutely entertaining. But.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God for like the.
Guy's got ears like a hawk. I mean,
but and you know,
depends on
the yeah, really.
And thank God for like you know the you know that there's less pop music.
Oh yeah,
and I was just like you know,
right.
And I mean, you know,
and what's used in it is really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know. It's not Macy Gray showing up for no reason whatsoever, which right. I can't.
Why did you even bring that up?
What? Because. I'm just making a point.
I should do that more than that.
Making a point.
Sony sucks.
Just making a point. You know, what the hell is what the hell is Macy Gray doing in the first? I don't know.
I mean, it's because it's because the production company is also a media company.
Yeah. But that's the great thing about really good sequels is that, like, you know, it seems as if, like, you know. The studio trusts the director more to, like, do what he wants.
Well, and I think that has a lot to do with one of the I think that's a big part of the reason why Spider-Man 2 is better.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the same way about X-Men 2, which
right,
is
yeah.
another superior sequel.
Exactly.
To a movie that I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, I mean, with the first movie, in both of those cases, you have Bryan Singer and Sam Raimi, who are, you know, really novices at this type of movie. I mean, they haven't really done big major studio movies before. And so it's like, you know, you're taking a gamble, and they pull it off well enough to where it's like, okay, you know, let's see what you can do with... Because, I mean, both movies were obviously hits, so, you know, hence why we get the sequels. But, you know, there's just that... Well, I mean, there's obviously the added financial security of, you know, the sequels, putting more money into them. But also, I think it has to do with the fact that it's like both of those guys were new at making movies of this scope. Mm-hmm. And
same goes to a certain degree with Tim Burton. Movies, you know, just...
Yeah.
I'm like, did anyone expect him to get, you know, the Batman franchise? I mean, did anyone see that
coming? No. But,
you know, speaking of money, Brian, if I may, I'm still convinced that, like, you know, the first one made... I mean, I've discussed, and I'm not a very well-versed person, particularly when it comes to discussing things of this nature, but why did the first movie make as much money as it did? Because, I was just...
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Okay, moment of silence.
We've got to talk about the man here. Bruce, don't call me Ash Campbell. It's Snooty Usher.
Yes.
And the second I heard that was the character he was playing in this movie, I just absolutely loved it.
And, reminiscent of one of my... Yeah, exactly. A little reminiscent of one of my few favorite scenes from the first movie, which was Bruce Campbell as the as the wrestling announcer. Yes, yes.
He makes you just want to slug him, but you know what? In a good way.
Yeah.
Oh god!
Random person playing the Spider-Man song again.
Just
which we had
more. Wow!
But
man. It's awful.
Again, it's. I find it hilarious.
It's hilarious, but it's awful.
But you know,
and it's hilarity.
But I'm saying, like, you know, gags like that, just would they have survived? Would they have survived in the first movie? I don't think so. And, you know, the same reason a lot of the gags in the first movie didn't survive is because they were. Anyway, going back to.
Anyway, you were talking about the money.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Ron, I think it's just a lot of it's just because, you know, the world has been waiting for a Spider-Man movie for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they had already talked about doing one before. I mean, you know, given the level of effects even in the first one, I wouldn't have thought that they could have done it, you know, way back when they were thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I think a lot of it, I mean, you know, you didn't like the movie, but I mean, I didn't think it was a hideous, you know, action flick. I mean, there have been hideous action flicks. I didn't think it was hideous for me.
Yes,
but, you know,
I can list some of them.
But, you know,
I'm going to stay quiet.
Right. But, I just think.
Don't tempt me, Dave.
We've been waiting for a Spider-Man movie for years, and now we got one. It wasn't too bad. You know? So then, you know.
Well, also, I mean.
I'm not saying anything.
Well, also, something we talked about in the first one, I know, that it was one of the first major blockbusters out after 9/11.
Right.
And it was a feel-good movie, or was intended to be that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether actually it made you feel good was a matter of opinion, but, you know, it was a movie it was the right movie at the right time.
Right.
You know, looking back at it now, no, it's not a great piece of filmmaking. It's certainly not horrible, or I don't think so.
Right.
But
sorry.
But anyway,
sorry.
No,
but you know, and then okay, you know.
I mean, I'm just saying that because of the fact that, I mean, I really do think that was the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know. People, you know, I respect the fact that you don't like the first movie. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to try to make you like the first movie.
Thank you for honoring
my... another gag here coming up.
Yeah.
How smart.
This is hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
Where do I know him from?
Hal Sparks from Talk Soup, and he's on that TV show Queer as Folk, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. And like all those VH1 I Love the 80s.
Yeah, I think that's where I recognize his face.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
Man.
Because I was trying to pull up, you know, where because I know I've seen him a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know, where has that been? And I think that's where it was. And I mean, you know, we kind of just got like gag after gag after gag coming along, you know.
Yeah.
And yet it kind of all works and flows within the movie, you know. Mm. And that was certainly not happening the first.
No, it was not. No. But you know, and I've talked to people since about the first movie, about both movies, and first movie in particular, you know, I've talked to people about it, and they've been like, you know, I thought it was okay, you know, and I was like, well, I mean, come on, I mean, I'm wondering, you know, some people, it seems like, you know, they're, just because it was a hit movie, they're, you know, they're wondering whether or not it's, you know, politically correct, I guess, to like, you know, to really, you know, share their true feelings on it, but, yeah.
There's nothing to be ashamed of.
No, there is.
That's why we have free speech in this country.
Exactly. But some people, it's just the vibe I get off of some people, just because, for whatever reason. And strangely enough, I mean, well, that's the thing. I could see, I've talked to people since about this movie in particular, and the response has been pretty similar.
Yeah.
Just because I don't think, you know, that's another really interesting aspect I wanted to talk about this movie was that as much money as it made, the people I've talked to outside of this little circle didn't seem to get it. Interestingly, I don't know what conversations you guys have had outside of the circle about this movie with other people, but I mean, I've talked to people that like just have not got just don't get this franchise, don't get what's particularly special about the second one anyway. Which, you know, I mean, I will support.
It's like I think part of that might have to do with just sort of an overall cynicism, maybe. I mean, you know,
well, I can. That's the thing. Back to marriage. I can
just see, you know, my theory about it, that it's like there's just this overall cynicism about how dumbed down movies are that sometimes it's really hard to see when the really good ones come along.
Because I can see why, to a certain degree, and I won't be able to articulate this, unfortunately, as well as I'd like to, but I can see to a certain degree why people wouldn't get this movie. Just because, you know, it's, you know, there's a certain style behind it that, like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, how many people do we know, seriously, who are that familiar with Sam Raimi, you know, outside of, you know, I mean, really?
Yeah, besides.
You know, I mean, for an action film, you know, the storytelling is just a little unconventional.
Yes.
You know, the love story is a little bit unconventional. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the character development is a little unconventional.
Yes.
You know, and everything's just unconventional enough together. That maybe some people just don't quite get it. You know, just can't quite grasp it. You know, it's an action flick. It's a superhero movie, but it's just a little bit different than the ones that are typically laid out, such that, you know, it's just a little bit harder to get.
That was really well put. Because
I can't
agree with you more on that. Just because that does have a lot to do with it. Just how unconventional a lot of the approach was
right. You know, I mean, overall, still feels like an action flick. It still kind of has, you know, the action flick stuff in it, but everything's just a slightly unconventional, which I think adds more to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
But maybe audiences won't get it.
Mm-hmm. But you know, I mean, yeah, I think you have a point there about the fact that it's like how many people are really that well versed with Sam Raimi. It's like, you know, I mean, the same can be said about Bryan Singer, the director of the X-Men movies, because it's like, he, you know, both of these guys, and, you know, I'm probably going to mention Singer a lot more because of the fact that he is now becoming a major player when it comes to comic book movies, but I mean, they both come from similar backgrounds. Low budget independent films get their first real big break as far as the studios go with a big budget comic book movie. You know, they prove themselves, and then, you know, then they feel like, okay, well, now I can go even further. Here's what I can bring to the table that, you know, maybe I wasn't really able to bring to the first one. You know.
Well, what's great about this movie, it's so much more a Sam Raimi movie than the first one.
Oh, yes, you know, I agree completely.
But I just had to comment on just how easily, you know, just like how conveniently placed that microchip is. Well, I love that. I love that. Yeah, cool. I like commenting on that. Like, it's just one of my favorite things to, like, just make fun of, just because of how obvious it is. But
in the technical commentary and in a lot of the documentaries, they made a big deal about the arms. And of course, because, I mean, that's, you know, and how much they use CG, but then how much they also tried to, you know, use puppets. Because they had some really, really complicated puppets that required a lot of work, but they tried to use puppets as much as possible. And I think that kind of really added to how real the arms look. I mean, the arms are always looking real. it's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The work that it's.
I couldn't see any other movie getting best visual effects from this past year. I could not.
Doc Ock's arms. When I first thought, you know, when I first saw that they were going to do him, I mean, I was like, how are they even going to make that work? I mean, that's almost impossible. You know, but the fact that they made it work, I mean, it's just simply amazing. Just for that, you know, Spider-Man flying is easy. That is hard.
Yeah,
I just have to mention that assistant of Doc Ock's is was, I can't remember the actor's name, but he played a lawyer on Angel.
Actually, oh, did he?
A couple of seasons.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I recognize him now.
Yeah.
How great is Alfred Molina?
Man, he's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, he is.
What I really like about him.
I mean, he just flies circles around Willem Dafoe in the first. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He does.
It becomes really apparent later on. I'll mention that later on. But anyway, what I really like about him, which reminds me kind of of Christopher Reeve, was the fact that, you know, because in the Superman commentary, they mentioned that one of the things about Christopher Reeve that made him so good was the fact that he kind of pulled his body aerodynamically. As he, you know, was you know, looking like he was flying.
Did I get you that DVD?
Yes, you did.
Yes.
And Alfred Molina, one of the things I like about this is that he, you know, he kind of moves his arms when they move the arms there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's really good about making it look like that he's got four arms, even though he never really had four arms, you know. When they were actually acting, and so you know he really did that well.
That's a great insight right there.
We should say that this is the first movie Sam Raimi has ever shot in the scope widescreen format. The CinemaScope format.
I love a lot of the images that came out of this sequence.
The reason he shot it like so is because of the fact that it was the only way he could get Spider-Man and Doc Ock in the exact same frame. You just can't do that in the flat format. It's not wide enough.
Right.
And which, you know, he's said he's a fan more of the flat format. And I'm sure he will probably go back to that format for Spider-Man 3.
Which, what do we think of the casting of
Thomas Hayden Church? I love it.
Sandman.
I love it.
That's going to be, yeah. I mean, the thing, I'm not that familiar with the Sandman.
I'm not that familiar with the villains, but I just love the fact that they casted him.
Yes, and aren't they going to do the Black Cat also?
Well, there's been a rumor. I don't think there's anything official. I mean, Chloe Sevigny mentioned it. That she'd like to do it, but I don't think anything official has come out of it.
Hasn't there also been some talk? I mean, some talk. Nothing more, but like Eliza Dushku. I thought I heard that somewhere.
I don't know where you're getting that info, because I've never heard it.
I think sometimes the part of Harry Osborn is played over the top just a little bit.
Yeah, I was kind of noticing that, too. It's like they're...
But you know what? It doesn't throw me out of the movie.
It doesn't throw me out. It almost seems like sometimes he tries just a little too hard to make to make that part work.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. But you know, if you listen to the Sam Raimi Tobey Maguire commentary, Sam Raimi was apparently all for it. I mean, he was. And this is
what a friend of mine, Jeff, called the most Sam Raimi sequence in this entire movie.
Oh, well, yeah, without question.
I mean, we essentially got a
horror movie happening right here.
it's like purely Evil Dead. It's right. Like, okay.
But again, you know, like the people I've talked to about this movie, like they mentioned the sequence, you know, like this is one of the first things that they mentioned throws them apparently throws them out of the movie is
really.
Yeah, I mean, really, cuz like it is a very dramatic shift in tone right here.
Yeah.
It's very obvious.
yeah, when I watched this again, I was like, wow. This scene's actually pretty intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like an intense horror flick right here. Mm-hmm. I mean, snaking arms, grabbing people's faces, throwing people around, you know, chainsaws and whatnot. I mean, this is actually pretty intense stuff.
There's a lot of Evil Dead, like Evil Dead-esque imagery.
Editing and
just the editing, the shots and stuff like that. Some of the performance even, like...
Oh, yeah, and the screams and the, you know, just the...
Well, there's that, but I'm thinking of a shot that's coming up like that.
Yeah, the chainsaw, obviously. That's...
But the cinematography by...
Bill Pope.
God, this is great. Bill Pope, best known now for the Matrix trilogy and Team America World Police. Also... shot Darkman and I believe Army of Darkness as well for Sam Raimi, which I actually did not know before until I was like looking it up for this.
Yeah, I mean this is pretty much Sam Raimi's like biggest blockbuster. Well, I mean the first Spider-Man was really.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And I mean, you know, but I was looking through Sam Raimi's list of movies. I mean, pretty much every movie on there I really liked. You know. But just wasn't quite...
Oh, yeah, I don't know... Well, I still haven't... Well, Quick and the Dead was not that great, but it had some really cool Sam Raimi-esque stuff to it. Wow.
Great effect shot right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that insight you offered, not you know, earlier, Dave, about, like, the way, you know, Alfred Molina uses his body, which, in relation to, like, the way Christopher Reeve... That always been, I think, something subconscious that I noticed subconsciously, but, like, that was a really good insight. I'm really now noticing it. But,